accession number 18269, reel 8.
Reel 8.
We cross over by rubber boats, and the only unfortunate episode I can remember was that three ponies were being towed behind one of these rubber floats, and somehow or the other they got twisted, and one horse seemed to spin round in the water and quite obviously got drowned. Otherwise, no great problems. At the end of it all, the second in command of the column and myself were left on the north bank of the Chindwin, and quite spontaneously we agreed to swim across ourselves, which we duly did. But I had occasion to very much regret doing so, because I must have swallowed a mouthful of Chindwin water, and the very next night was absolute hell as far as I was concerned, because I was feverish, violently sick, and was awake all night. And when I lay down, I was continuously sick, and if I sat up, I had diarrhea. So that I was a bit of a physical wreck by the morning. However, we just had to keep going. So did I. But the MO arranged for my pack, which was probably weighing something over 50, 60 pounds, to be carried on one of the spare mules. And so managed to stagger forward. All sorts of people have endless stories about the trials and tribulations of going over the mountains and having to carry these heavy packs on our backs, in addition to a rifle and ammunition, and probably a couple of grenades as well. Speaking for myself, I just remember falling flat on my face in some muddy spot in a wet forest, and I couldn't get up, even with help, without undoing the uniform belt and taking all the equipment right off. And similarly, once crossing a river, I caught my knee against a submerged bow, and fell flat my face into the water and went under. But I think the dry state and the pack on the back, the water took the weight off, and so I was able to get myself up straight again without undue trouble. But I think at the same time I lost my little miniature camera. After that, the going was relatively easy, because it's more or less level ground, mostly along fairly established tracks. There was one occasion where the column thought they could take a shortcut to get to a particular map reference, but somewhere along the route, I ran into dense bamboo forest that you simply could not get through, and so the column had to literally turn around on its own tracks and go back onto a rather more open trail. Anyway, apart from the weight of the packs on their backs, which could, of course, be anything up to 70 pounds when really full, the going for the next few days was relatively straightforward and really quite uneventful, fortunately. At one stage, as admin officer, I was sent forward to liaise with Brigade HQ, who were ahead of us at that stage. No doubt to liaise with Brigade HQ to take a supply drop. And I remember meeting Brigadier Ferguson, who chatted to me and was feeling very pleased because he'd ascertained in some nearby village that two or three lads that he'd had to leave behind through wounds or illness the previous year had managed to survive and avoid being caught by the Japanese. The main problem with this march in Burma itself was that we were under pressure all the time to make haste and get ahead. And the net result was we really had no proper rest for best part of a fortnight, I should think. And when we did ultimately arrive at the field fortress called Aberdeen, we only stopped there just overnight, and the very next day we had a push off on an approach march to our main objective. Next, the objective of the brigade was to capture Indore, which was more or less a communication centre for the Japanese 33rd Division, I think it was, in northeast Burma. It was Wingate's general idea to capture Indore and its two airfields and create a divisional field fortress. full stop. Anyway, we were told our objective, our 21 columns objective, was to go round to the west and approach Indore from the south and to wait on the southern boundary of Indore until we heard the sounds of battle from the other side of the area. On our approach march, at the end of one day, we finished up on a mountain ridge. And I remember that there was no water anywhere to be found. And we actually scratched around in a little stream bed in the sand, trying to find water at the bottom. In the hole that I dug, I suppose it was half a cup full. So I think the mules had to go without water that night. We crossed over the Mesa River, where a roadside ran close beside it. The river was possibly 50 yards wide, but it was not too deep for everyone to cross on foot. It's probably waist deep as far as I can remember. We achieved that without problem and carried on round. And during the second or third afternoon, I remember we crossed over the Beta Gauge Railway, which ran all the way from Rangoon right up to Michinar. I was very pleased to see the rails looked distinctly rusty. And it was shortly after that when the head of the column came to a chong, or stream, as they call it, where there was a vertical cliff about 50 feet down. And I think the head of the column must have been halted by that, because it didn't seem as though it was going to be possible to get down into the stream. However, the net result was that the column halted there, and my rear HQ section was the tail end of the column, with only a rear guard platoon behind it. And I remember when I approached this area and what was virtually open teak forest. It wasn't really jungle at all. It was open teak forest because I could see 50 or 60 yards ahead quite easily. And as I saw the various mules standing around, I noticed some tire marks in the leaves. Wasn't a forest track or anything really, but quite distinctly fairly fresh looking tire marks on the dead leaves and the odd bits of soil here and there. And I thought, good God. I thought, why on earth are we stopping here with those tire marks in the forest? Anyway, when we got to our area, I was told to into the centre of this zone. I was told where to for the rear column to settle down, I'll say, anyway, to stop. And having sort of indicated that, I had it in mind to go back to the adjutant and say, haven't you seen those tire marks over there? Why on earth have we stopped here? Surely you don't just imagine that's some native timber cutters or something. But before I could get away to do that, I heard a couple of lorries coming through the forest. And then, of course, it turned out to be two lorry loads of Japanese troops. I just saw one lorry stop. after that, all hell let loose. I never really saw much of the action at all, but it was absolutely all hell loose. Everyone seemed to be firing away with their small arms. And I was a little bit disappointed when I heard, after about 10 minutes or so, heard one of these lorries start up and drive off. And I thought, oh God, surely somebody's going to put that out of action. But then after a time, the adjutant came to me and said, oh, pass the word, get the word passed round that everyone is to get down to the Chong individually and cross over and reassemble the other side. So I did pass that word on. There was one mule quite close to me that was it had a piat. I expect you heard the piat sound. And then had a piat on it, and it's a fairly big mule. So I managed to persuade that to go a little bit behind, or a little bit way down this cliff, to get out of the firing line anyway. But having done that, I thought, well, people must be getting the other side. So I went down, thought that it's been just a stream, but when I jumped in, more or less at the base of this cliff, I was rather astonished to find that the water came out to my chest. Anyway, I scrambled out to the other side, and I rounded up about half a dozen of the troops who were already there and just standing around. And took them through a rather dense undergrowth and stuff. I took them about 100 yards from the Chong on the far side and away a bit to the left, where I thought, well, if the Japanese do their usual trick of doing a pincer move and coming in at the back, that should be somewhere where they're likely to approach. So I took about these half a dozen or so chaps to this position in the undergrowth and trees, and told them to find themselves a decent sized tree trunk, get behind it, facing outwards into the distance, and keep dead quiet. And if any Japanese approached, keep absolutely dead quiet until they were literally only feet away, and then either bayonet them or shoot them or whatever. But anyway, keep dead quiet, don't make a sound. And then I went back to the stream to find out what was going on, and while I was there, I did see three figures running across the stream. Oddly, you could see it because the sunset was shining up off the water, and I saw two or three figures virtually running through shallow water. And I crossed my mind and thought, oh, I don't know, they can't be Chindits or our chaps. They won't be in a fit state to run nimbly like that through water. But had other things on hand at the time. But it did so happen that three or four Japanese at least. And lo and behold, they walked straight into this squad that I'd posted behind the trees and things. Absolutely incredible. They went right to the right spot. And of course, there was a burst of, a sudden burst of firing there. It didn't last long, short and sharp. And hearing that, I went back to see them. And then we could hear, well, I could hear at least two Japanese troops shouting to each other as they went away. And And in fact, that turned out to be the nearest approach I personally had of coming in contact with Japanese at all. But at least I had the satisfaction that they did the walking away. In time, everybody gathered together, and rather as an emergency matter, the CO did authorise to blow whistles so that anyone who'd got a bit lost would know where to come and join the column again. And since one lorry had got away, well, obviously it wouldn't do to hang around in that area at all. And so as soon as we got as many people as thought likely to get, it went off on a compass march into the jungle. This time, of course, it was completely dark. And we went on a compass march to the next rendezvous, whatever it was. I can't remember what it was. It's just a map reference, of course. But it's pitch dark. And during the course of the march, after about half an hour or so, I got a message passed back verbally from the column. Will an officer please come to the front? So obviously I was the first one the message had reached. So I scrambled forward past a number of troops, and apparently one bloke had lost contact with the people in front, which wasn't surprising because it was dense jungle. You couldn't see a hand in front of your face. There was no light, literally no light of any kind at all. And apparently this bloke, you see, there was a break in the single file line. Column always travelled in single file, as you probably know. So I went forward and I found that's what the trouble was. They lost contact. But fortunately, well, as a matter of good training, I knew what the compass bearing was. And so I just got out the compass. And we probably went on for another hour or more. But it's curious that since one couldn't see a damn thing, really, I think, apart from working on watching the compass the whole time, I think one simply knew that one was following the column because, well, somehow you felt the ground under was fairly firm with all the footsteps and mules' hooves. And if anything, it didn't get held up by bushes and things. So it was really subconscious, really. But anyway, we did stop out sometime in the middle of the night. And, we just sort of lay down on the ground and went to sleep. We're all dead tired, of course. But I remember when I got up in the morning, I found myself, suddenly found myself soaked from practically head to foot. And I wondered for a moment why. And then, of course, I suddenly remembered that I'd been almost up to my chest in water the night before. Anyway, I do remember that I think they managed to establish wireless contact with Baitner and Chindit base in Assam. And I know when I was making up the making out the code supplies for the next supply drop, that I remember thinking, well, we're asking for two Vickers machine guns and all sorts of other things like that. They'll realise we bumped into something. But anyway, we just carried on and we formed up in a long line, waiting to hear the sounds of battle over indoor. But In actual fact, we never heard a sound. And so in the end, we just got up and walked on. And I think by that time, we'd probably received radio instructions to sort of go and get lost up in the next range of mountains, which we duly did, and probably had a good old rest, which we badly needed. Probably took a supply drop, although we had so many of those that I can't remember the details of any particular one. Ultimately, we were told to go back to Aberdeen. But we couldn't take the shortest route because the indoor was in the way. So we had to get up into a range of mountains which was east of Indore and east of White City, where the 77 Brigade had got their block on the railway. So we duly set out to do that. We were going, there is a road and railway which runs from Indore down to a place called Kathar on the river Irrawaddy. We thought we'd cross this road and rail feature by daylight, but when we got to the road, our leaders could see there was a Japanese soldier on the roadway where the track, a track anyway, led off the road. So we had to lay doggo for the rest of the day, hidden away in the forest jungle. However, night came. Unfortunately, this Japanese guard or pack guards had gone away. And so by night we crossed the road, and we were in process of crossing a railway line when we heard a train coming, steam train. good old steam train, puffing very slowly, because it's a very much an uphill section of line. And we, being pitch dark and having to push our way through bushes and all that sort of thing, we couldn't get the column clear. So in the end, the column just lay back in the bushes and let this train go chugging right through it, through the middle of the column. Fortunately, no mules. Well, the mules had been debrayed, of course, for a start, but one or two of them began to get their voice back. But fortunately, no sound gave the column away. So nothing happened. But in retrospect, I've often wondered why on earth that railway was still operating. It seemed very odd to me to go and block the railway north of Indore and yet leave this short branch line between the Irrawaddy River and Indore still operating.